This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
He left the game early. He's like, dude, I just got out of there. There's so many fans leaving before the end of the game because you're so afraid. You're so afraid to freaking get stuck in traffic.
Well, I blame the county more than I do the 49ers. Like, they've set it up so poorly. And what the other thing that I would suggest, and I want to get into the game itself, but they need to, all of the fans walking through the parking lot, to get over the street, they need to put some sort of a bridge. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to get the $50 million right. Or whatever it is. I mean, the NFL is just printing money.
Right.
Get the $50 million bucks, put the infrastructure in place, have a bridge so that all the cars can go underneath it and the fans can walk over it. In the same way, when you walk around Vegas, none of the fans are allowed on the street.
Yep.
You're just kind of like stuck in your own little areas, mm-hmm. and cars can go in and out. That's what they need to do at these stadiums.
There's no doubt. 405, is it laundry day for Vontae this morning? No, it's called lazy day for Vontae. Throw in a white tee and call it the day.
Sounds like the 49ers strategy on offense.
It is.
Possibly.
Right. Before we get to the Niners, we got a couple of Warrior calls here. We'll get the Warrior calls out of the way, and then we'll get right to the Niners.
I got a lot of Niner thoughts.
Robin said, Brute, I'll see you lurking in the cut. We'll get to you. We will get to you. But we'll start with Nick in San Jose about the Warriors loss. Nick, San Jose.
Hey,
what's up, Nick?
Hey, guys. As a father of a 9-year-old boy, it's so great to hear you making memories with your daughter, Bonte, and Joe, with your son. Awesome. Look, I need your advice. The formula is simple. Have less than 15 turnovers, and I understand that we pass the ball a lot more, and I adore Curry. That's one of his Achilles heels, and I'm glad that Kerr kind of got on him a few weeks ago about that. But the foul shooting, and this is to Bonte specifically. If Moody's worth $12 million a year, what I see with Kuminga is unbelievable athleticism. I know he's in his early 20s, but as Miller said, Reggie Miller, he just doesn't understand the angles yet. And I think he only played 19 minutes yesterday because he's guarding, I think it was Coffey or Powell, three quarters of the court, and he broke his ankles. And you should have saw Kerr's body language. Yep. He's exacerbated with – so here's my question, Bonte. I know he's young. I can't give him more than $25, $30 million a year. What am I missing here? I find him more disappointing to me when I watch than exciting. Talk to me. I'd like to hear what you're – because I know you're big coming up. What am I missing?
Yeah, no, the straight line drive right before halftime drove me crazy, as well as you, Nick, and thanks for the call. His contract situation, it's going to be very interesting. Now, here's my read on it. The Warriors, by not extending him, it was a smart play by the Warriors. I'm not going to dispute that. I think it was a smart play right now because you want to see what he does. But now you have this hovering over his head. And now it's almost like in Kuminga's head maybe, and I don't want to speak for him, but you got to think that a player, when he doesn't get that extension, is saying to myself, boy, I don't know if they really believe in me. So maybe Kuminga believes he's worth $30 billion, and that's some team will probably give it to him. But maybe the Warriors at this point say, yeah, we don't think you're worth that. And maybe, which is why this past offseason was so tumultuous in terms of Lauri Markkanen and Paul George and all these trade rumors, I don't think they're completely sold on Kuminga.
Well, okay, so there's many, many questions here. The first one, well, I'm going to go off the reports that the Warriors wanted to give him about 30, give or take, about 30, and he didn't want that. Well, why do you scoff at that?
No, I'm just listening.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe I was misreporting that. But, like, that was a report that I had seen. Like, hey, the Warriors tried to offer him $30 million a year, approximately, and he thought he was worth more. Well, I would say to Jonathan, I don't think you're worth more. And I really like Jonathan Kuminga a lot. Yeah. But if Giannis is worth 50, you know, high 40s, right, like, no, you're not there yet. And maybe down the line at some point, he is worth that kind of money, but I'm kind of with Nick on this one, and I don't think that money's out there for him. I personally do not. Now, could there be a team out there that gives him over $30, $35 million a year? Man, I'd be surprised.
I could see the Brooklyn Nets doing it. I could see the Brooklyn Nets giving him some money. Maybe. Now, again, I don't know how to, because the new CBA has terrified everybody, the first and second apron and picks or whatnot. And now, were there numbers discussed with the Warriors at Kuminga? I don't know. I don't know what was definitive or whatnot. But right now, look, that was a setback for him. Kuminga's been playing some good basketball.
No, he's a really good
Memphis
player.
Memphis was a setback a little bit, but since he shifted to the bench, I think Kuminga's been a complete professional. Now, in terms of Moses Moody and Kuminga, I would like to see a little more from Moses Moody, but for whatever reason, he doesn't see a lot of minutes. And this is what I found interesting in Moses Moody's contract. This is what I did not know as you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ, FM, and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app. Moses Moody has incentives in his contract, and I did not know this. So if Moody beats all three of these incentives, he will receive an incentive that starts at $462,000 in 2025-26 and increases by a maximum of 8% each year. Now, we all saw the three-year, $39 million deal, but in order to achieve these incentives, he has to attempt to look at this is crazy. He has to attempt at least 9 three-pointers per 100 possessions, achieving at least 60% true shooting, and playing at least 1,600 minutes. Now, he has to average about 19 minutes per game. He's at 17 right now. You get what I'm saying? I did not know you could do incentives in the NBA.
I didn't know
that. I know it was prevalent in football. In the NFL, you see incentive-based deals all the time. But I didn't know Moses Moody had incentives in this deal. So what I think the Warriors are doing right now, obviously the itchy trigger finger. There's no doubt that this roster can look different at the deadline. It can look different. And you have to think that Kuminga and Moses Moody, either they're going to play well here, or there could be two candidates that could get shipped off. And I hate to say that. It's just the writing's on the wall here.
Yeah.
You know, it's if you're that active in the offseason looking for deals or whatnot, obviously you have these assets and team-friendly deals with Kuminga, Moody, Pods, or whoever it is. And I'm not advocating to trade these guys away. But it's obvious that maybe everybody in this organization isn't on board with Jonathan Kuminga. Or not sold on him to give him a max deal.
I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, look at his. It's been up and down, right? It's been up and down the entire way. I just look at it this way, right? Like, I think I like Kuminga. I like him at a certain price point better than I like him at like $35 million a year, right? I don't think he's currently worth that. Do I think in a different system, playing a different brand of ball, could he? Maybe, yeah, absolutely. But if you're unwilling to give Jordan Poole $28, $29 million a year, and I thought he was a more refined offensive player than Jonathan Kuminga, though I know there's two sides to the game. You got to play defense as well. Then why would I be jumping over myself to give Kuminga over $30 million a year? So I say to myself on this team, like with Andrew Wiggins making what he's making, which is under 30, and Draymond making what he's making, which is under 30. No, I don't think Jonathan Kuminga currently should be your second highest paid player on this team. I don't. And now, if he has a monster finish to the season and he just shows out in the playoffs, look, I'll reassess my opinion. But as of right now, no, I think they made the appropriate choice. And I think Jonathan may have a suitor out there, but I think it's going to be hard to find 30-plus million.
I don't even look at it like that. I look at the situation as the Warriors organization just got under the luxury tax. And then they're under these aprons. And they have all their picks. Why do you know, as an organization, when you finally got under the tax, I'm not going to be in a rush to give out another max deal. I just got under it.
No doubt.
Now let me sit back for a second and let's win some games. Let's see how this team plays out for the first couple of months. And then we can get back to the drawing board. Sure. We can get back to the negotiating table. Now, at some point, Kuminga would would be worth that money, but we'll see.
But the other part of this is that if you do deal him, what's kind of baked into the equation is the team on the receiving end has to have a pretty good feel of how they view Jonathan Kuminga and how much they're willing to fork up for him. And then what is he willing to agree to, right? So I do believe that whatever trade package you have out there, the trade partner, if you go down that route, has got to really like Jonathan Kuminga in terms of thinking about extending him right away.
Now, with that said, I do like the combo of him and Buddy Hield off that bench.
I do, too.
I think they come off the bench and give this team firepower. And you look at what he's done since shifting to the bench in 10 games. He's giving you 16 points a game. He's shooting 49%. Now, his three-point shot is at 37% after struggling a little bit over the last couple games. But the free throws is where he's got to get better at, 61% for the free throw line.
Monte, I want to make it very clear. I love Kuminga. I really like him. Now, price point is a different conversation, but I love the player, and I think he's had a really good start to the season.
Hey, let's go to Matt in the quarter pocket real quick. Matt in the quarter pocket, then we'll get to Robbie Sabruto. We'll push back. See, we'll do 60 seconds of celebrating before Baldy. Matt in quarter pocket, what's up, baby?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to give a shout out to all the overnight heaters. They were working hard last night. Temperatures in the high 30s, low 40s. You feel me?
I love it.
Hey, so two things. One, Jesse, you would love to see Bonte at Clay's return game. He was the king down in the corner. He was the king. There was Warriors royalty down there.
Stop.
Bonte was just holding court.
I was just watching the game. That's all I was doing, Matt. I was watching the game while I heard you from your seat scream all day, "Hey, Bonte, what about this play?" I'm like, "Matt, sit down, dude. Watch the game."
He big times you, man. I'm sorry.
No, I apologize on behalf of the show. I even talked to Matt. Was that Friday night that I talked to you after the game?
Yeah, I know you're big time.
No, you were with your piece outside the room with your suit on, your backpack, everything else. Your girl was talking about all kinds of stuff. Like, oh, no, yeah, it was good. It was the Clay night, whatever night that was.
It was Clay night, yep.
What do you got?
So let me give you guys one thing on Kuminga. And, you know, there was a game last year. Bonte, I think you'll remember this. Joe, you're definitely going to remember this. I heard you talk about it. When he goes down into the post and he had Jeremy Grant on him down in the post, and the Warriors needed to find something. And he went down and he scored 8 points in a row. Bonte, you know where I sit. It was right there on that side of the basket, and he went to work. And we sit there every game going, when is that coming back into the offense? Jeremy Grant is an athletic player. Say what you want about Jeremy Grant, but he's long and athletic, and Kuminga ripped them apart in the post. And we just don't see that. We're not seeing that. So, Joe, I'm with you on the wait and see mode of all of it, but man, like, I almost wonder, this is kind of one of those utilization things again. Are you putting him in the positions to be successful? That's the question.
Yeah, that's a good point. And he's good on that block. He really is, and he provides something that the Warriors do not have on this basketball team. All right, we'll get to Robin Sabruto first thing after the break. Rob, hang tight. I want to hear what you got to say about the Niners, because you're going to set it off with the Niners talk here over the next couple hours. Baldy, 7:30. Robin Sabruto, who is he blaming for the loss on Sunday, and are the Niners cooked? You know, Rob will keep it real. He will keep
what
it real.
Me?
So, Rob,
I got a lot of thoughts on the Niners.
Well, you always get worried. Yeah, I don't know what's real or not. You're always worried all the time. So, I don't know. But I know you have a lot of thoughts. Wow, look at this. 5-0. Watching the Rockets game last night, my wife thinks Bonte looks like Fred VanVleet. I told her Bonte's taller. I told Fred VanVleet, hey, we might be cousins. Only because I wanted to feel those millions that he's making, man. This dude's a baller. Yeah, he kind of had the money, right? I'm trying to live good. I'm trying to live good out here in the streets. All right, more coming up here, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Under 20, Smith back to throw. Smith takes off. Geno Smith, end zone ahead. Touchdown, Seattle. The Seahawks on his back, and Seattle's got the lead.
Yeah, it's not like us, but that's just what we've shown this year. So I guess until we stop doing that, then that's who we are.
What's going on, Roasters? It's Brian Baldinger with the NFL Network, and you're listening to the Morning Roast with Bonte and Shasky on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Davis on the call for Fox Sports as Geno Smith went night-night at Levi's Stadium. Seahawks went 20-17. You heard from Fred Warner after the game. He sounded exasperated. Got Baldy coming up at 7:30. And it's a tough loss. It's a tough, tough loss. One I didn't see coming. Three division losses. All those games, the Niners had a lead within the final 2 minutes of the game. And I was bringing this down yesterday, Shasky, before we get to Robbie Sanbruno. Against the Rams, they were 0-2 in the Rams. He had a chance to basically put them behind the eight ball and end their season. Drop them to 0-3. You give them a lifeline, you lose the game. Miss a field goal, bad containment on the punt team. Ronnie Bell drops a pass. You know the story. You play Arizona. He had a chance to send them to 1-4. They had nobody playing in that game. Remember the injury report? Mm-hmm. Hey, we had Gabadoro on it. He's like, dude, I don't even know why we're showing up. Well, you blow the game. Jordan Mason fumbles inside the 10-yard line to seal it. They run the ball right down your throat. And, of course, Brock Purdy throws the pick. You lose. Seattle. He had a chance to basically put them behind the eight ball and drop them to 4-6. And they came off the bye week, and they really came out sluggish. They had no business being in the football game. Really, no business. Yet, you give them a lifeline, and now they're playing for first place this Sunday at home against Arizona. It's just maybe the theme of the season. Maybe this is just who they are.
I thought one of the big swings in the entire game, right after half, Niners kicked the ball off to Seattle, and Geno throws a pick that was just horrible.
Oh,
a horrible pick, okay? An absolute horrible pick. And the Niners went backwards. I'm going to give you the sequence. CMC toss, stutter step. It was a really good run. Then a play action, fake toss, pretty good awareness. He throws it away. CMC first down run on 3rd-and-1. Then offensive penalty. I don't even know what they're doing. Some sort of an illegal formation.
Hill's holding an illegal formation on the screen pass.
And then 1st-and-25, yeah. They throw short. 2nd-and-19, nobody's open. Purdy's scrambling. But then again, I watch on the broadcast, and actually guys are open. And then on 3rd-and-15, a quick check down. Yuck. Huge stop. Moody hits a 33-yard field goal. And you're like, oh, you got a field goal. No, you should have punched it in for a touchdown. Instead, they march down and I just thought Walker and DK and Lockett and JSN, they were making plays. And Lockett that was the sequence where Bosa came out of the game after the sack, and they had a 3rd-and-12. 3rd-and-12 that they converted on. And right then and there, I could feel it. And the stadium was already flat, but you could feel the air getting sucked out of the stadium. And I know the game swung back and forth, and we're going to get into all the challenges and everything, but that sequence right there, that was a microcosm of the season. Team throws it away. You make a great defensive stop. You get the ball on a short field, and you just self-inflicted and bad execution after bad execution. You kick a field goal instead of punching it in. They march on down, and they execute on 3rd-down, and then Bosa's hurt. It was just the whole season right there.
When Bosa left, and I'm going to get to Robbie Sanbruno here, Bosa was on the field. Seattle averaged 3.3 yards a play. He left the field, didn't play again. And Seattle averaged 6.1 yards per play after he left the field. So Bosa's important, and we probably will see Bosa over the next couple weeks here. That was per Nick Wagoner of ESPN. Let's go to Robbie Sanbruno. Rob, didn't hear from you yesterday, but it's good to hear from you today. What's going on?
What's up, Rob?
What's going on? Nothing much, just chilling. But like I said, man, the season, it resides on Kyle Shanahan in the play call sheet. Mike McDonald, we out coasting.
I agree.
A couple days ago, I watched a few plays where Niners running a play action boot, and the backside defender stayed home every time. They didn't go nowhere. So that tells me Seattle really studied them, and they took that away. So you took one thing out of his armor. Okay, then they had the short passes. I don't think Seattle was worried about one 9 yards a catch, crafty like game. I don't think they cared about that because they know when it mattered most, they was able to stop it. They get in the red zone, them same little 8-yard press they're throwing. Juwan Jennings, now they're not working no more because they took it away. So I feel like they got out coached. And me, honestly, Mason needs to be playing more. I think he got more juice. He slams it down in a hole a little harder than does. CMC looks slow, man. Like the runs he had the other day,
yeah.
He had the runs because the offensive line opened it up and they guided him then. And it was there. But when it comes to like creating some more space, he ain't what he was last year. I think Mason needs more carries. And I just think, look, it is what it is. He's talking about paying Purdy all his money. Look, if we pay, let's say pay Purdy that money, a lot of guys that's hurt, they're not going to be on the roster next year anyways. I think Purdy just plateaued as a player. I think we peaked last year. And I think that where he's at is fine. If you got the right players around, he's going to be good. He's more of a Matt Hasselbeck. He's not a guy that you pay $60 million to. Purdy for the next 3 years, draft the young guy.
Let me ask you about Debo and some of the separation at the wide receiver spot, Rob. We're going to get the ball to you about this. I was alarmed at the lack of separation from these wide receivers on Sunday.
I mean, I'm not, because the Niners' passing system is basic. They don't stretch the field, and teams know that. So they just don't. There is no threat of them going over the top. They just don't sit on the slants, the crossers, and the inside digs and all that. They're not going to get them the respect. They're not going to use it. So it's just the NFL. You're not supposed to get 5-6 yard separation. It's supposed to be tough.
Right.
That's where the coach is supposed to help you get downfield. So when people say, oh, separation, no, when I watch some of the greats, the Jerry Rice, the T.O. didn't get a lot of step. He just got the ball and made plays when he got the ball.
Jawan Jennings was awesome.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, right. He was awesome. So, he got no separation.
Explosives. I mean,
no,
like,
I agree.
Like, it looks like these defenders have vice grips on the wide receivers. Vice grips.
Yeah,
like, these guys can't even get off the line of scrimmage.
You still got to make plays.
Yeah, like, but you can't get off the line of scrimmage.
Well,
these guys aren't making plays. They're not even getting off their – they're not getting off the press, but, man. They're not being able to run routes.
I get it.
Like, players got to make plays. But they're not even uncovering at all. Like, Ricky Pearsall – I was like, where's Ricky Pearsall at? Where's he at?
But Bonte, like, this goes back to play call. And look, it's a combination of things. I don't think it's all on Shanahan. I do believe player execution killed multiple drives. McKivitz, Banks.
Play calling's not going to help guys get off the line of scrimmage.
No, yes, it does. Play. Because on 3rd and 4, yes, for example.
You call whatever play you want to. These guys can't separate and run routes.
Well, no,
Debo right now is not a good route runner.
I disagree.
He's not a good route runner right now, Shasky. Come on, man.
No, I'm saying I disagree. There are little wrinkles that you can do as a play caller to set your guys up. For example, 3rd and 4 on the drive where they did score the touchdown with Kenneth Walker. JSN gets wide open on this rub route. It was a beautiful combination play, and they had Barner coming across, and basically they just pick played everybody. They were running this play over and over and over again, and they had this huge soup, and by the time D'Amon Lenore comes out of the break, the guy is wide open for a simple 5-yard pass to move the chains. Like, little tiny things like that. Does it work every time? No, but there are some things that I thought that Seattle did schematically, was just brilliant. Look, at the end of the day, guys have to make plays, and I understand what your point is about separation, but there's also stuff that you can do in the passing game to free guys up.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. But at some point, you got to win one-on-one matchups.
No doubt.
When you're paying Debo all this money, and I spent a first-round pick on Ricky Pearsall. Now, I don't know if there was many plays designed for Ricky Pearsall. I have no idea. And obviously, they missed George Kittle. Like we're very elite here. Missed George Kittle tremendously 100%. In this football game. They had no speed in the middle of the field. And the creativity with the play calling. I do wonder, like, why the 49ers don't throw outside the numbers? Why? Is it because of the quarterback? Or is it because that's not how Shanahan rolls?
Well, it's very
strange to me.
DK, Lockett, and Smith and Jigba, they were in lockstep with Geno Smith in the outside routes all day. The Niners were giving them cushion, and the amount of times that he ripped a throw beyond the numbers toward the sideline, I must have counted 7 or 8 of them in that game. So you're 100% right. We do not throw to the outside. But Bonte, the guy that you're not talking about, who I think is the best player that I haven't talked about enough, Devin Witherspoon was dominant in this game.
He was dominant in this game.
He was incredible. Devin Witherspoon is an amazing secondary player.
There's no doubt he's a great secondary player. He's a great corner. That's why they drafted him in the top 10. He's a baller. But for whatever reason, and Shanahan threw outside the numbers when he had Julio Jones in Atlanta, and he was calling plays. You know, they were making plays out all over the damn field. They used every blade of grass in Atlanta that season. I don't get the schematics in the passing game where guys are running out routes, and I see Pearsall run out routes here and there and get open, and Purdy just doesn't, whether he doesn't pull the trigger, whether that's the primary, I have no idea. But the passing game does, like Rob said, it does feel outdated. Now, I think they need some more juice at the wide receiver position because, yes, play calling could be a bit better and freeing these guys up, But sometimes you got to just bad up and win matchups. And these guys did not win matchups more times than not.
No doubt.
Sunday. They just didn't. I'm sorry.
Juwan Jennings was really the only guy on offense that showed out. I thought CMC tried hard, but he didn't have a lot of juice right now.
He doesn't have juice.
He just doesn't have the same wiggle.
Look, I'm not saying tanking, because a lot of people are coming at me about tanking. Brad Gilbert, I was talking to him yesterday. He was at the game. He was at the Warriors game. So he hit Mully up. He was at Clippers Warriors. And he goes, Bonte, you can't take with the 49ers. I said, I'm not taking. But I'm looking at CMC. And Drake Greenlaw doesn't seem like he's close to playing right now. Just shut them down for the rest of the year.
But here's the thing with the CMC. Like I get your point. Here's the thing on the CMC. Does that even mean that he's healthy 100% next year?
I don't even know.
So
I don't even know.
But no.
But if his Achilles snap right now, then he's going to be out until he's going to be all out next year.
I feel like they're damned if they do.
But he can't get to the second level right now. Every run play felt like it was going left anyway. He just doesn't seem like he has that burst when you're watching him. Just look at the, like Greg Cosell said, he looked like CMC last week. I disagree with Greg Cosell, and I know he's an expert. He knows a lot more about football than I do. But I don't see, like, I'm at the game, and I'm looking at CMC, and I'm just like, can you play Garrido? Can you play Mason? Like, I'm with Rob.
Well, mix him
Mason
in a little.
Care. But Garrido had the 76-yard run against Seattle. He's got Mostert-type speed.
Yeah.
This offense needs speed, explosiveness.
Well, it felt like once Mason fumbled that kick return, like Shanahan was done with him.
I just don't get it.
Well,
I don't get it. You're running CMC, who's just bilateral Achilles tendonitis. I'm sorry. I disagree with the notion that, you know, just feed him.
No, you got to spread the ball around.
You have Garrido, and that's what I want to see. Can I see Garrido? Can I see Cowie? Can I see Pearsall? Because if the season doesn't go anywhere, I need to go into the next season. Can I count on these guys? Not a bunch of question marks like we had with Ronnie Bell going into his second year, or question marks with other guys like Trent Taylor or Richie James Jr. I need to see what Cowie is, I need to see what Pearsall is, and I need to see what Garrido is moving forward.
Well, they keep running these jet sweeps with Debo, and they're not working. They're just not working.
Oh, those are done.
Debo's so sluggish right now. It's just
Shasky, he doesn't run good. Like, I don't care.
No,
I don't even care if you diagram good plays for my rub routes. Can he even get outside on the rub route now?
I would like to see them, if they're going to utilize him, like, out of the backfield as a pass catcher. Like, that's the way I'd like to see him, you know, deployed at times. I don't know what's going on with Pearsall. Juwan Jennings is making plays left and right, but here's the problem with their offense right now. On key downs, how many times did they throw short of the sticks? Because guys are in Purdy's face, and Juwan has to go hot on a lot of these routes, and so he's cutting his routes 3-4 yards short, and then he's got to fight through 4 or 5 tackles. They missed Kittle so bad in this game. And
they
then
did.
I just thought the offensive line, Brendel had a bad penalty.
McKivitz
had multiple bad penalties. Banks had multiple bad penalties. I mean, guys were not executing at all.
McKivitz had a bad game. McKivitz had a terrible game.
I just think
game.
He's not good.
He had a terrible game. What about the block passes at the line of scrimmage? Pass deflections at the line of scrimmage.
People know now that if Purdy's in the pocket and they can't get to him, they're going to stop and jump. Because a lot of the routes, where are they going? They're going over the middle of the field.
Is it size and height?
Absolutely. The one that he threw to CMC on the interception, he was late. It's okay. He was late. He was late throwing to CMC, and he was lucky. That was going to get picked no matter what.
It was going to get picked off. It was going to get picked.
Whether that got bounced up in the air or not.
It was not pretty. It was not pretty. Right now, it's a lot of doom and gloom out here in San Francisco. We got our boy Baldy with the white button up. Is Baldy ready to roll? He's ready to roll. All right, let's get that intro here. Shark Week.
He breaks down plays better than anyone.
I mean, this is like Shark Week.
Crack.
You know what Baker Mayfield is? He's chum. Look at these sharks. You think you're getting away from those four angry sharks? It's Shark Week. It's time to eat. Make the read. Urgency. That's the name of the game right here. Urgency. Now, on it. He's on it. Touchdown. Beautiful throw.
He's our 95.7 The Game NFL insider, Brian Baldinger.
All right, joining us on the River Islands guest line, Brian Baldinger, presented by our proud partner, Golden State. Serving the Bay Area for 3 generations. Building better starts with Golden State. When you succeed, we succeed. Visit GoldenStateLover.com. And Baldy, we're talking to you this morning after another disappointing loss Sunday at Levi's Stadium. The game, really, the stadium was flat at kickoff. It felt flat throughout the game. The Niners play flat offensively. They give up the touchdown to Geno Smith. He goes night-night at Levi's Stadium, and they drop to 5-5. And there's a lot of ire towards Kyle Shanahan. A lot of people just blaming the head coach here. I believe players have to make plays. But obviously, this has been a disappointing season thus far. And I keep thinking what you said a few weeks ago, Baldy. When you Shasky asked you the question, what do you see when you see the Niners offense? And you said slow. Well, they're not getting any faster because they looked slow again on Sunday. Good morning to you, Bobby.
Good morning to you, Bobby. Well, they did. I mean, that's everybody. That's McCaffrey. That's, you know, I mean, they had one explosive play on offense. They can't get the ball down the field. And, you know, it's always been a hallmark of any, you know, any coach team by Kyle is they're going to get explosive plays. And you can literally, there's all kinds, I mean, there's a million stats out there. But you got to track explosive plays in this game. They change the game. And they change field position, and they give you the jolt of electricity you need. They couldn't get the ball down the field. I mean, they had one play last week by Jennings of 22 yards, and that was thrown before 20. He just got some yards after the catch. But they can't get any explosive plays in the run game or the pass game. And they still look slow. They look, and then when it really showed up was with Geno's touchdown run at the end. Like, where is everybody? Like, where's the speed? Like, I know they're in zone coverage, and ideally, zone coverage, Geno's, like, breaking a pocket. All right, let's get on the horse and go. And you just didn't see the speed to get to him. If you get him down to the ground, they might run out of time. Yeah. You know, you don't know at that point.
Yep.
On that final drive, sticking with the defense there, what did you notice? Because I thought that the offensive coordinator for Seattle did a lot of little tiny creative things that I appreciated, but it felt like Geno, he gets sacked and then he runs for that first down, and Niners had their hands on their hips and they were gassed, and it felt like they didn't contain him, especially on that final play. What did you see from the Niner defense on the final drive?
Well, you know, he also ran for 13 yards at a first down prior to that, right, mm-hmm. Joe? And you watch the play, and nobody has the signal. The defensive line is they're all looking at each other, like, what's the call, right? And so Seattle's in hurry up. They're in a NASCAR mode. They're going up tempo. And really, when they rushed, nobody was coming off the ball. And then and especially in the last one, like, there's no discipline to the rush. You know, one defensive tackle is getting washed inside. There's a huge lane. Obviously, there's no Nick Bosa on the field. He got hurt earlier. And so, you know, whenever he's not out there, it's always noticeable. But I saw undisciplined rushes, Joe, and I saw on a couple of those. And then, look, I mean, Jackson Smith and Jigba, he's just finding the holes in the zone mm-hmm. on some of those throws. And there's no pressure on Geno. And so, you know, it's a combination of no pressure, zone defense, receivers that understand how to find the openings, they took advantage of it.
I wonder, Jackson Smith and Jigba is going to be a star this league. He is coming along here. He's ascending. He's a baller. Seeing him in person, I'm like, wow, look at the route running by this young man. But do you think they should have maybe blitzed more? Because Greg Olsen was on the broadcast. He was saying, man, one blitz here. And Nick Bosa, when Nick Bosa, he was on the field, Seattle averaged 3.3 yards a play. He left the game early third quarter, Baldy. Seattle started averaging 6 yards a play. So without your premier pass rusher, Leonard Floyd's obviously going to get the attention on the other side. Do you think Sorensen maybe should have dialed up more pressures? Now, I know that puts a lot of stress on your young secondary, but something's got to give here. You got to either get some pressure on Geno. He got way too comfortable in that second half.
It was too easy. I it's easy for Greg. I mean, look, I don't disagree with Greg at all. Mm. But even, you know, when they did blitz, I mean, it was just Fred Warner just kind of fitting in as a fifth rusher. There wasn't anything overloads or free hitters. They don't really know how to do that. I'm not here to throw Nick Sorensen under the bus, but they don't, as opposed to, you know, Steve Spagnuolo and some of these other teams in this league that are good blitzing teams, they just don't know how to get a free hitter to the quarterback. They just don't dial it up. They don't overload. They don't disguise. And so they're pretty bland in what they do.
Wow. I mean, that's
crazy. You could say lack of creativity on both sides of the ball, Sasky.
Well, I'm sitting in the game. I brought the little guy to the game, Baldy, and we're sitting there, and I'm going like, oh, they're just going to throw a little out route to DK here. They got the matchup that they want, and they attacked that when they needed to. They hit pick plays when they needed to. I thought Kenneth Walker ran really hard. What does this defense look like, though, without Nick Bosa? Because the oblique injury, have you ever had an oblique injury, I guess, number one? And number two, like, how long do you think he's out, and what does it look like without him?
Well, it depends on where it's at. I mean, if it's a lower abdomen injury, he's going to be in Philadelphia getting surgery from Dr. Bill Myers because it's not going to heal. So I've had it twice. He does all of the – if it is lower abdomen, I don't know where in the oblique it is. If it's just normal, it's still going to take a couple weeks. You can see, like, he played one more play with it, And I saw him hopping. Like I looked like it was, a leg injury to me more than an oblique injury. Because you see him pull up on his last pass rush. He got the sack. He got up. He wasn't right. He was favoring his leg. Next play, he tried to come off the ball. And next thing you know, he's hopping off the field. So I don't know exactly what the injury is. But to answer your question, Joe, they don't look like there's a single threat out there to get to the quarterback from any position, including Leonard Floyd. They don't look like they have anybody that can beat one-on-one pass protection right now.
That's not pretty. That's not pretty with Green Bay and Buffalo on deck. We're talking to Brian Baldinger, as we do every single Tuesday at 7:30 here on the Morning Roast. All right, let's get to the offense here. Boy, offensively, you talked about the lack of explosives. Let me ask you this. You would know more than me. We were just having a discussion about getting separation at the line of scrimmage. So Niners are one of the worst teams when it comes to their wide receivers getting separation on routes. They're one of the worst teams when it comes to yards after catch, which is amazing because they were number one last season, and they dubbed themselves the Yak Boys. How much of that is on the play calling and creativity of Kyle Shanahan, and how much of that is on the players? Because I always feel like players got to execute, but maybe it's something on Shanahan. You tell me, Baldy.
Well, I mean, there's an old belief in this business, Bonte, that if you can't beat man coverage, you got to get new wide receivers. And, the, you know, I mean, Juwan Jennings wins because of his size, not because of his separation. So, and he's very good at just low post basketball when the ball's in the air. So he had a good day. But look, that's what I would do to Debo. So if your guys are struggling to separate, then you've got to find different ways to get guys open. Whether it's bunch formations, whether it's man beaters, crossers, stack routes. I mean, you got to go in a different direction to get guys open. And so I would say that's, you know, part receivers and part Kyle right there. But honestly, Bonte, like, it's kind of hard to believe that they could play that poorly because George Kittle isn't in the lineup.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has to replace a great player. But their ability to run block without George Kittle is horrible. They played Jalen Moore as the second tight end. Like, Saubert, Moore, like, they were terrible on Sunday. They had, I mean, I showed yesterday, like, I showed, like, eight McCaffrey runs where he went for 2 yards or less.
Mm.
And honestly, they were horribly blocked plays. They've been running the same five plays from different formations and different motions since Kyle's been there. And they couldn't execute at the point of attack.
Is that all offensive line? You referenced some of the tight ends there. Is Juice having a good year? I mean, Baldy, you study these things.
Yeah, well, I mean, he wasn't asked to do a whole lot on Sunday, to be honest with you. When he's in combination with Kittle, they're about as good as it gets in how they set guys up and how they double to the next layer. But, I mean, Jalen Moore didn't know what he was doing out there in some of those runs. Huh. And Saubert wasn't very good. And just, to, you know, you're working in concert with one another, and it looked bad. Leonard Williams is a good player. Like, if you try to position block to Leonard Williams, he's going to go right through you. And that's what he did to Aaron Banks. He didn't play particularly well. And so I thought the run game was terrible. I also think, like, this is going to be criminal. But, honestly, Jordan Mason looks like he's hitting a hole harder and faster than a couple of the runs that he had than Christian Eck. And I don't think there's anything wrong with Christian, but your eyes can be wrong. Your eyes can still need time because you haven't seen anything since the Super Bowl. And now you're going out there for 40 carries or almost 40 carries last 2 weeks. And I don't know if his eyes are perfect right now, the way that we're used to seeing them.
Well, Baldy, we talk about slow and speed and having some explosiveness on offense. And we were discussing this earlier today. I'm glad you led me to it. Christian McCaffrey's not getting to the second level. And at the game, we're both, Shask and I, at the game. I got my daughter there. She knows what time it is. Like, boy, this guy's not getting through the hole. He's not getting to the second level. She's not even four yet. Jordan Mason's had a hell of a year. Isaac Garrido has juice, which you've been on since day one of training camp. And we know he hurt the hamstring on day one of training camp, but he's been back. And he just popped a 76-yard run against Seattle on Thursday Night Football. Why is there so much reluctancy to not just give guys, hey, let's give McCaffrey 10 touches. Here's Mason with 5-7 touches. Here's Garrido. Get him out there in space. I just don't get it because, as you just pointed out, we could all see it. McCaffrey's not right now.
He doesn't look special. He just doesn't. And so, Mason, he hit that first run of his 8 yards up the middle.
Yeah.
Like, he hit that hole so, like, a, like we've been watching him hit it all year.
Right.
You know, where he was second in the league in rushing a couple weeks ago.
Two carries, you know, Baldy. Two carries.
Two carries. He got 8 and 5 yards. So, like, he hit the hole the way he's supposed to hit the hole. And so, I think, who knows what's being said. Obviously, they're not sustaining offense where you could get the number of carries that you want. Although they had 27 carries, you know, some of them obviously are scrambles by Brock. But I don't know, like, the way Jordan hit that first run, I'm like, that's what they need. They just need somebody just to, like, just be a bullet right through those between the line. And then he always, you know, he's taking the pile with him. So I don't know. Like, I think Kyle probably thinks that when we get to the postseason, if we get to the postseason, we're going to need McCaffrey at his best. Let's play him into shape. And I think that might be part of it. But that was not an impressive run game by the 49ers on Sunday.
All right. We're going to get into the quarterback in just a second. But, like, Devin Witherspoon, I don't know. This guy is a freaking star, I think. And maybe I'm overstating it, Baldy, but, like, physicality, the ability to flip the hips, you know, understanding where guys are going, where the routes are going, and where the quarterback wants to throw. I was so impressed with him. I know he's a different position than Kyle Hamilton, but the way that coach used Kyle Hamilton, I'm saying, oh my God, we're going to have to face this guy for the next half decade to a decade. I think he's a rising superstar. Am I putting too much on it, Baldy?
No. I mean, he's arrived. I mean, coming out of Illinois, he was clearly the best corner in the draft. Nobody hit like that. Now he's playing a little bit more under control when it comes to hitting. I don't think he's going to survive the way he was hitting. Maybe he could be Buda Baker and survive. But, because, I mean, he just hit like, but his ability to break on the ball, you know, he defended three or four passes the other day in tight coverage. But his ability to blitz, he came off the edge, he batted down a ball Brock Purdy's the other day in coverage. His tackling, it's crisp. He just plays the game at an electric speed. And so you almost have to keep your eyes on him all game just to see what he's going to do.
Baldy, going back to the quarterback, Brock Purdy, I don't know if this is on him or Shanahan or what, but even in the pass game, and I get it, they're not getting much separation, but everything is over the middle of the field, man. There's still adjustments. I don't get it. We were watching Seattle with DK, Jackson Smith, the Jigba, and all these teams use every blade of grass. Yet the Niners, they're like allergic to out routes. They're allergic to throwing in the flat. What? I mean, Baldy, is this just a scheme? Or is Purdy able to do that consistently, throwing outside the numbers?
Well, I mean, they do like to attack the middle of the field. Most teams funnel everything to the middle, you know, and so that's where that's kind of where they want you to go. And so it makes it tough. Makes it tough to make a living in the middle of the field all game long, especially if you're 6 feet tall or 6'1". You're not going to have the type of vision that some of these other guys, Joe Burrow, whatever, has. But, that, you know, he still has great touch on it. He made a number of good throws, but they're not using every blade of grass, and they're not hitting some of those option routes the way they once did. And so they look, you know, it just looks pretty, it looks, because they look slow and because they don't get explosive plays, it, and I'm not saying this is the word I want to use, but they look predictable, very predictable in what they want to do right now.
All right. I feel like we've gotten, this far. The clock management. I thought that the Seattle coach called the timeout to get the ball back with over, you know, on the other side of 2 minutes to be able to give his team enough time to march down the field, knowing he had one extra timeout in his back pocket. Shanahan burned the first challenge on the Jackson Smith and Jigba one near the sideline. I didn't like that challenge. It wasn't a third down call. It was short of the sticks no matter what, whether it call stands or not. And then he used another one a little later on DK near the sideline on like the second play of the final drive. Just what did you think of clock management, using your challenges? Like, these things all kind of bite you in the butt when you look up on the scoreboard and there's only 13 seconds left as Geno's walking in.
It's not enough time to go down the field. I mean, you but at the same time, you're thinking your defense is going to stop them at the same time, or at least hold them to a field goal, you know, and maybe play for overtime or like that. I don't know if you can kind of look backwards at that like that. You just hope your defense can get them off the field or just force a field goal right there at the very least. And so, you know, maybe it's just trust in his defense. They thought they could finish the job, which they couldn't do.
All right, so let's go to the second to last 49er possession. They're up in the game, 17-13, and there's 2:58 on the clock. It's 4th and 6 from about the 43-yard line. Do you go for it? Do you kick the field goal? You got Moody back, even though, you know, it's probably a 60-yard field goal, give or take. Did you like the punt, giving the ball back to Seattle? They kicked it into the end zone, and so I don't know.
Terrible punt.
You know, I just you're in no man's land. What did you think, especially given how that game was playing out?
Well, I mean, look, if you don't make it, Joe, you're getting the ball at the 42-yard line, you know, so that's. You know, that's the downside of it. If you punt, you make them go a long field, you know, as long as you can. You like to keep the ball, you know, within the 20 for sure. And, you know, pin them deeper, make them go a longer ways. I'm not a big fan of the 60-yard field goals. And unless you're Brandon Aubrey last night, you know, in Dallas, like I don't, especially after the debacle that it was in Tampa, that's got to kind of weigh on your mind a little bit from the week before. So I think those are some of the situations that you're thinking about in that situation. 4th and 6, I don't know. Like, that's not a – I don't care what analytics say. I think I probably would have punted right there.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Punt, I had no issue with that. But what about 2nd and 11? A lot of people had a problem with Kyle Shanahan dialing up a pass. You don't get the, you get McCaffrey stuff for a minor negative gain. He loses a yard. It's 2nd and 11, 3:02 left. And I thought the play, yeah. I thought the play design was really good. I thought the actually one of Deebo's better routes. I think, but he's wide open there. Purdy throws high. It's incomplete. Did you have an issue with that play call at all? And if so, or if you didn't have an issue with the play call, Baldy, what happened on that play? Was Purdy just too quick? Was the defensive line in his face? Hands up. What went on that 2nd and 11? Because I like the play to call.
I thought about the same thing, Bonte. I thought the same thing. Like, man, just keep running the clock. You know, maybe a different type of run. I don't know if it's a toss behind Trent, whatever it is. They obviously weren't very good at it all game long. Maybe that affected Kyle in the call. I didn't have a problem. You know, I mean, obviously the execution hurts. You stop the clock on the incompletion. So that's an issue. But I kind of thought, man, 2nd and 11, the clock just clicked. You know, the clock might be the enemy. But as it turned out, I don't know if Seattle would have had any problem scoring the way that they did, even if they had less time right now.
I mean, where do they go from here, right? the season's over. The season's not over, okay? There's still a lot to fight for, and they may not look good currently, which I agree with, but the season's not over. So where do you go from here? They got to face Green Bay this weekend, and they're a beatable team to me, but I don't know what the Niners do well that they can hang their hat on all week to really fire up the fan base right now. We're down in the dumps, Baldy.
Some Sundays, Joe, you look like a 17-point offense, and that's just not good enough in this league. You know, whatever. I mean, it's 3 times now so far this season where they've scored 18 or fewer points. And you go, if that continues on stretches like this, that's not going to get you to the postseason. Even if you do get to the postseason, you're not going to win any games. Like, they've got to find ways to get more explosion in their offense. Now, you know, this new defensive coordinator in Green Bay, I mean, they're doing a good job. They press the receivers. They rob the middle of the field with Xavier McKinney. They play 3 safeties. They're all really good. Evan Williams, Xavier McKinney. They just going to be interesting because you're talking about attacking the middle of the field. Well, that's what they want to take away. And they're going to force your receivers to beat tight man coverage, and they're going to rush a 4-man rush. So you're going to have Rashawn Gary out there, some decent pass rushers. But this is a game where the receivers have got to win. You know, whether it's Pearsall or, I don't know, if Kittle's back or whatever, I'm going to be up there announcing the game. I'm really looking forward to it. But, you know, at some point, you got to beat good teams.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're going to go to the postseason, you're 5-5. Everybody's sort of bunched up there in that division. Arizona's beating good teams. At some point, you got to beat good teams. And might as well start up in Green Bay, who's got 19 takeaways. They got Jordan Love played fantastic last week. You got a really good runner, Josh Jacobs. So there's a lot of things to contend with. And an offense that's very creative. They do a lot of different things. totally different than what Kyle does, but it's going to be a good matchup between these two teams. But if you score 17 points in Green Bay, you're not beating that team.
Yeah, just ask Chicago, right? They scored 19 and get their field goal blocked at the end of the game, and Green Bay still has one in the Windy City. So you already answered my next question. Lambeau Field. Lambeau, what is Baldy doing? Lambeau Field. We wanted to make this road trip. We unfortunately can't make it. It's up to Green Bay. I wanted to go. I know the elements are going to be a factor here. I hear that rain is going to be in the forecast. We'll see about that. But I love this type of football. Give us the laydown, the breakdown of Lambeau Field. Baldy at Lambeau.
I mean, it's really football heaven. I caught one pass in my life. It was at Lambeau Field, 37 yards. I might, you know, recreate that moment coming out of the end zone and getting us out of trouble when I was with the Colts. I've known a lot of Packers over the years. One of my best friends is Sterling Sharp. You look up there, Sterling Sharp in the Ring of Honor. It's honestly like you go into Lambeau Field, I don't know, Don Hutson, Bart Starr, Favre, Aaron, you know, the coaches, Lombardi Avenue. You look up and it's like the history of the NFL is right in front of you. On all of their Curly Lambeau, whatever it might be, it's the history of the NFL when you walk into that stadium. The fans are as good a fan base as there is. I mean, you go out there and tailgate with them. They welcome all of the people that were coming from San Francisco, 49er fans, Pack fans. They played legendary games in Green Bay and San Francisco over the years. You're sort of reminded by all those great games and all those big moments. And so all that, you kind of take it all in, and you just sort of inhale it and just go, this is why we're so obsessed by this game of ours. When you go to Lambeau, it comes to life.
So sports pilgrimages, if you were saying, like, it used to be old Yankee Stadium, but it's gone. And the old Boston Garden, it's gone. You know, like, you still have Dodger Stadium, but I don't know if Dodger Stadium hits like Lambeau, because when you say Lambeau, it hits.
Yeah.
What other ones that you can think of off the top of your head would you throw in there that are sports pilgrimages that a diehard has to make?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously you go Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so the Garden, you know, obviously there was just a big UFC fight there this weekend. But, I mean, you know, if it starts with the Garden, I mean, you go out to the, you know, the L.A. Coliseum, you know, to see USC play, or, you know, you can see, I can still see, you know, the Olympics in 84 there and some of those races and some of those events in there, some of those legendary Raider games that were played in that stadium. The Rose Bowl is a legendary place. You know, you almost have to start going to some of these college venues, Joe.
Yeah.
You know, to start, like, really taking it in. You know, you go to the Big House in Michigan.
Denny Bryant.
I remember going to Ohio State and playing when I was a senior. Like, in the visiting locker room where we're like, it smells like roses. Because the goal every year for Ohio State was to get to the Rose Bowl. Like, they have the rose scent inside. You're like, you stinkers. Like, you think of all these little subtle things. You know, like, you can go through the list. You know, you go to Tuscaloosa, Bryant-Denny Stadium. Like, there's, you know, some of these places are just phenomenal.
I mean, the old Orange Bowl before they tore it down. But how about Touchdown Jesus in South Bend, Indiana?
Yeah.
Going to Notre Dame. Have you been to Notre Dame, Baldy? You been down there to Notre Dame?
Oh, yeah. Touchdown Jesus, yeah. My dad, we drove across there. We moved from New Jersey to Minnesota one year. And on January 1st, we timed it. We drove across the country to Minnesota. On January 1st, We touched down at South Bend, Indiana. My dad made us go see the stadium. Notre Dame played Texas for the national championship that day. I think it was the Cotton Bowl. And we just happened to my dad take us to the stadium that day and let us kind of walk around.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome
was
stuff.
Was that Montana's team?
That might have been Montana's team, right?
No. That was 79.
Okay.
78, that was against Houston, but this was 1969.
Oh, so way back one. Oh, way back.
You talk about your lone catch here. Here it is right here, a lead ball.
This tackle-eligible play was a neat trick that transformed lineman Brian Baldinger, number 62, into a pass catcher.
The run was great. Did somebody, like, clip your legs out? They took your legs right from under you, man.
They blew me up, man. Well, you know, because the longer you get away from it, the bigger the lie gets. Yeah. I just tell people that the fastest Packer caught me from behind and then blew me up.
You should have said you were doing the Dion and then, you know, celebrating prematurely.
Well, I wasn't really trying to do the Dion. I was just trying to protect myself. But back then, we had such great – we used to run – when we got a lead, we would run the wishbone with Eric Dickerson and Albert Bentley, And we had a wishbone quarterback that came in. And I said, they would ask me if, they asked me when we went to the wishbone, look, will you go from guard to play the tight end? Tight end spot's more important than the guard protecting the edge on this wishbone. I said, I'll go play the tight end for you, only if you put a pass in for me. Like, I want to catch a pass. So Ron Meyer was our head coach, and he put the pass in. He called it up, and, you know, my one moment of fame, it came true at Lambeau.
That was awesome. That was awesome. Baldy, you're the best, man. Have fun at Lambeau this weekend.
Yeah, see you guys.
All right, Brian Baldinger here on the River Islands guest line. A lot of fun with him. Put a smile on our face after a tough loss on Sunday with the 49ers. All right, we got to run here. We'll react to Baldy. 888-957-9570. Do you agree with what Baldy said about this offense? Looks stale. Offensive, not throwing outside the numbers. Defensively, no blitzing. They just, what? You're going to let Geno get comfortable?
Nothing special from CMC.
Nothing special. Nothing special right now. We'll get to that. But first, the injury report.
For the injury report.
It really hurt.
Brought to you by Boxer and Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation law firm, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years.
All right, quick updates from Shanahan. Brock Purdy is dealing with shoulder soreness. He's day to day. Tatum Bethune has an MCL sprain and will be out a while. Nick Bosa will have his injured hip and oblique monitored throughout the week. TBD on him. But George Kittle is expected to be able to participate in practice on Wednesday. So some positivity with the 49ers there. The injury report brought to you by Boxer and Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation law firm, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years. All right, what's coming up in the game? Brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. 888-957-9570. Shasky's back. Shasky's riffing about the Niners. He's not happy. What about you, fans? We heard a lot from you yesterday on a Reaction Monday. What about today? You've had some time to digest the loss. How are you feeling about Shanahan now? How are you feeling about Brock Purdy?
The high-level loser, bro.
Oh, don't say that, TC. Don't say that. He called yesterday. Spadoni was ready to run off the curb, man. TC, you want to call back? Go ahead. After you digested everything, you had a couple days now. You had a day now. How are you feeling now about the loss of the season moving forward? We'll react to Baldy as well. That's all coming up here on The Roast, brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises.
It makes me very uncomfortable.